Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you, and she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
That's almost 52 years so far. The world has become a worse and worse place. Every year we have polluted more water than the year before. Every year there's been less clean air than there was the year before that. Every year there are fewer species on the planet than the year before that. We're driving 200 species a day to extinction. We're about to see that turn around. The loving planet is about to make a comeback. And that's really, really good news.
She bats last and she's coming out swinging. She bats last and she's just about taking all that she can take. And it's payback time, motherfuckers, it's payback time. I said it's payback time, motherfuckers, it's payback time. For the strip mine plans, for the another dead species, for GMO, for uranium ore, for screwing your kids for a few dollars more. Now it's payback time, motherfuckers, it's payback time.
The loving planet is about to make a comeback. The loving planet is about to make a comeback. The loving planet is about to make a comeback. And that's really, really good news.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This November 24th, 2015 edition, episode 65 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from the Mud Hut in southern New Mexico. Our thanks to Afrozen as we play the entire theme song for those people who love it.
And especially for those who don't.
Right. Thanks for his contribution. Find more of his work, which we'll hear a little bit more later, on SoundCloud.com. We're joined today by our friend and colleague, I believe it's pronounced Paul Marcotte.
Very good.
Thanks. He is from a place we call Canada, and he's making his sixth and next to last appearance at the Mud Hut. Thanks for helping us out today, Paul, and we hope to hear from you a little bit later. Today's show is set aside for your questions and comments, so you can call us toll-free at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. But before we kick off our discussion, let's read a statement from Afrozen, which we've read several times this year, but probably the last time for this particular year, in case you've missed it, about his theme song. In my journey through the DABDA stages of grieving, regarding my understanding and expectations of what is to come in terms of anthropomorphic climate change, this song expresses my time in the first A, anger. With time and reflection, I've made it through to the second A, acceptance, and my position regarding my lyrics has changed. They made sense when my assumptions were, one, that humanity and nature are separate, two, that humanity is, quote-unquote, committing crimes against nature, and three, that humanity will be punished for doing so. My thinking now is that, one, I don't see a fundamental distinction between our species and the rest of nature. And two, humanity is behaving exactly in accordance with its evolved genetic imperatives to survive, thrive, and multiply today, regardless of the consequences tomorrow. I think my lyrics' vitriolic theme and tone are misplaced, and I suspect the song's effect might possibly be to either foster or reinforce anger and bitterness in listeners. These are natural and appropriate emotions when first waking up to the predicament we are in, as I understand it. But in my personal experience, anger and bitterness are unhelpful and detrimental, if not worked through and overcome. The upsides of this new perspective for me are greater compassion and tolerance for my fellows, greater peace of mind, and general happiness. I can only wish the same for others who are going through this.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks to Paul Marcotte for joining us. If you've checked out Afrazin's work on SoundCloud, then you know about his expansive talent. Let's play the flip side of our theme song, Nature Bats Last. The flip side is called E-Race, that's E-Race, and it's about extinction of the human race. It starts with this line, home stretch for the human race, and it gets better from there.
Right on.
Afrazin, this is the end.
I love that.
Yeah, I think he wrote that in 2012.
Yeah. Whose voice was that?
Oh, the voice in the background.
Yeah. In our song, your voice.
Right. That was a guy named Jay Hansen, who for years had a website called dieoff.org. Wow. I think it's still maintained, but he hasn't written there lately. Now he has an email distribution list called America 2.0. This is one of the original Doomers.
Gotcha. Little known fact here that this is the original song, theme song for Friends. It got cut.
Right. Oddly enough.
Oddly enough. Yeah.
The studio thought that wasn't a great idea.
Right.
I don't know. People are funny. We do have a Doomer of the Week this week. Her comment fits today's show. Joan Haynes writes yesterday on the page of the Near Term Human Extinction Love Group, "It's quite a diatribe, so settle in for a bit." Here's how much of a doomer I am. I have to exercise daily or my depression and anxiety skyrocket. I go for about 30 minutes to a little neighborhood gym, and I like to do my own thing, kind of CrossFit, yoga, weightlifting blend. I like making up movements that involve the whole body with stretches and weights. I'm also inherently practical. For example, in the spring, I did a bunch of movements that would help with my gardening. Lately, here's what I do, though. I think of movements that would be practical when the shit hits the fan, like chopping wood, carrying a heavy backpack, pulling a drowning child out of a flooded river, whoa, and short intervals as if I'm running for my life. I started off doing this by jabbing at the big punching bag and realizing how absolutely angry I was and also profoundly afraid and wanting to fight back. I want to feel strong and capable. That's what my exercise time gives me just a taste of. It's a fuck you to taking it lying down.
Wow.
Yeah. Well done. Joan. So when the shit hits the fan, you do not want to be around Joan and on her bad side.
But she can market that and make a video.
Oh, yeah.
Like Ty Bo.
Oh, yeah. The Ty Bo market.
Right.
That's a good market.
It's a good market.
Oh, yeah. And the anger market?
Even better.
She can attack and, yeah, whatever. This is the final sentence from this year's Doomer of the Week. It's a fuck you to lying and taking down. It's a perfect lead-in to our first topic this week. Remember, we're taking your calls. Toll-free number is 888-874-4888. We'd like your on-air comment about yesterday's post at Nature Bats Last, which included a documentary film produced by Ivy Cohn. The film addresses the seventh stage of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief. The seventh stage, which I coined about a month ago, is fuck it. Ivy's film includes interviews with 10 individuals and their responses to the seventh stage. We're interested in hearing your take, so give us a toll-free call at 888-874-4888.
So what did you think of the film? I mean, we all saw it for the first time yesterday. Let's talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. Paul?
Paul, you were in it.
I thought she did a very good job. And, yeah, I think it went very smoothly and everybody had different views. And I thought the best one was Benjamin the Donkey.
Yeah.
His little one-minute speech was wonderful.
Yeah, it was a really, really long, complicated lyric. Yeah.
Limerick,
rather. Yeah. And I heard from Ivy that it took him something like 20 or 30 takes until he got it just right.
Yeah.
So he's quite the perfectionist.
And on that note, because I think you mentioned something about, you know, because we were supposed to get a minute each.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And I was listening to it again last night, and I checked the time for him. It was exactly a minute.
Of course, that's why it took 27 takes or whatever.
Wow.
It was. Right?
Precisely 1 minute long.
I hope you didn't time mine.
Like the first 26 takes, it was 58 seconds. So he had to stretch a little.
Yeah.
Well, it was great. I think she did a great job.
Yeah.
So I hope a lot of people have had the opportunity to take a look at it.
We should, I don't know if we posted it on our pages yet. We should do that, the link.
Yeah. Well, it's posted on my timeline, of course.
Yeah.
Because it's all about the film.
But you only have an exclusive 5,000 friends that could see that.
Well, but I posted on my other page, which has another couple thousand.
Wow, you have another page.
Yeah, I am. I'm the real deal.
We'll put that up, or it sounds like I'll put that up on the NBL pages. Yeah. So you can check it out.
It's an excellent idea.
It's a good 20 minutes worth of time, and like Paul said, there's a variety of answers in some things I didn't even consider.
Right, and one I want to talk about briefly. It's from our friend Corey Morningstar, who's been interviewed on this show and who has done the Breaking Hopium now and then. And she's an amazing, radical investigative reporter.
Right.
She writes some really great stuff. And when she was interviewed for the documentary film, which was only about 2 weeks ago, she said, "I'm not at fuck it yet. I'm at fuck them."
Right.
And she goes on and she says, fuck the oligarchy, fuck everybody who's fucking it up, and on and on.
It's a really good piece.
Yeah. And then the day the film came out, she didn't even know it was out yet. So this was yesterday, Monday morning.
Okay.
And I posted it at Nature Bats Last. And she sends me a little text message. She wants to talk on the phone. She says, "I'm there. I've reached the fuck it stage."
Yeah.
So I said, you're too late. The film came out 3 hours ago.
Yeah. That's this thing called editing.
So I see a sequel.
Right.
You know, the Corey Morningstar sequel.
Right. The epilogue. Right on.
And some people were absolutely unwilling to throw in the towel.
Yeah.
Which is sort of what fuck it implies, and that's not what I had in mind.
But I think that's what it was up for interpretation, which
right.
was great. It wasn't just a throw in the towel type statement like most people think of it when they hear it. They go, oh, well, that just means giving up.
Right.
So, and I think, you know, what there were 10 people, I think almost everyone had a different take on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Starting with Mary Nelson.
Yeah.
Who's in her 80s. I met her a couple of times.
Right.
She's in Chico. She's probably listening right now.
Yeah. I can't believe she said fuck it.
Me too. she starts out by saying something like, this is not the kind of language we would use, you know, back in my day.
Right.
And then she sort of builds up to it. Boom. Shazam.
It's on.
Like a Joan Haynes punch in the throat.
Right.
Yeah, that was a big shocker.
Yeah.
She says at the beginning something like, what the heck, or something. Yeah. The word heck. And I thought, well, that's probably about as strong as we're going to hear from her, but I was wrong.
Yeah, then she laid down the lumber.
Yeah, that's for sure. That was great.
Hey.
Hey.
I'll be visiting Miami Beach next week.
Wow.
Should I talk about that for a while? Because nobody's going to call in. We need to stretch.
You're not going to fly there, are you?
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to fly so that the next time I can just ride the tide.
Oh.
Perfect.
Yeah, Miami Beach, home of the beginning of the National Geographic show.
Yeah.
It was in Miami, wasn't it?
That's right. It was in Miami and Miami Beach. And those are two different cities. Miami Beach is a few hundred thousand really wealthy people.
Right.
And Miami is 5 or 6 million poor people.
Right.
You might be able to get a good deal on one of those new condos that they were showing being built along the beach there.
Well, maybe, but apparently they're not buying it, even though there's a paper in the Referee Journal literature that I was going to mention today, but I sort of lost track of it already. It says Miami Beach is underwater in 2025.
But they're raising this in those neighborhoods 3 feet. They're fine.
Yeah.
Who's on the show? It's not.
Yeah, we just need to raise the floor and then raise the ceiling. It'll be fine. Right. What those people fail to consider is it's not the rise in sea level. Mm. It's the attendant storms that go with that.
Oh.
Right. So it's not like you're living beside a little pond.
Yeah.
And the level of the pond rises a few feet, but it's still this nice bucolic pond.
Yeah.
No, it's we've seen what 9 inches of sea level rise has done so far, producing superstorms like Katrina and Sandy and Haiyan and so on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real deal. You can raise your house all you want. Put it right up there where the wind can really take it.
And seeing as once this El Nino that's currently happening fades off into the distance and we get into the La Nina, then there's going to be probably a huge hurricane season in the southwest, or the southeast.
Right.
In the southeast.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk a little bit about my near future trip to Miami Beach. And it comes thanks to the support of Matt Devlin, who is an artist and filmmaker. The trip coincides with the famous art extravaganza Art Basel. I'll be doing some recon for a project to be created for the 2016 version of Art Basel, if Miami Beach is, still above water.
Yeah, right.
The project will be focused on the art world during the challenge of climate change. And I'll also be checking out Ground Zero for sea level rise in the United States while I'm there, because smoke them while you got them, as they say. In addition, there will be a gathering at a location to be determined on Sunday, December 6th. It'll be promoted on Facebook and on the blog, so pay attention to those two spots if you want to catch me. I'll be signing and selling books and generally hanging out with anybody who will talk to me. I think it'll be a small audience. Stay tuned for more details, and the details should be posted at those two places by the 2nd of December. So go ahead and look for that. And we have a caller?
We have a caller, Matt from Florida. Matt, you there?
Guy, I'm on the road with a low battery. I hope that I get everything out in the short time. I like to participate in the fuck it. I'm not really sure how to do that, though.
You just tell us for 1 minute what fuck it means to you as a stage of grief.
Well, it's really about the choice of fighting or running or acquiescing. It's the fight, flight, or give up response. I see fuck it as a give up. You can't fight it. You can't change it. You got to deal with it. And because you're going to be dealing with it, it's going to be terrible. The word fuck seems to pretty much sum up the feeling. It's you can't change it. You can't run away from it. You can't do anything about it. So it's just going to be awful. So it's just preparing yourself for being fucked. And that's my fuck it. Am I under a minute?
32 seconds.
You're doing great.
We're proud of you.
Well, enough of this fucking stuff. I don't know if you caught the comment by Princess Charles about the upcoming war in the Middle East. and saying that there was a refugee crisis going on out of Syria that was global, that was climate related, because I guess they're having a drought there. I don't get the weather for the Middle East too often. I don't look it up, but something tells me it's going to get hot. It's going to get dry, and the people down there are not going to like it. And so my guess is that this war is going to be an excellent cover for any climate issues. I'm also listening to Naomi Klein's audiobook, This Changes Everything. Boy, she's got a lot to say there, and got to have respect for her research. She doesn't seem to have many good things to say about the oil industry, and she seems to be calling them dishonest. I can't imagine why. And
inconceivable.
quite a bit of data on that. And if your audience has not taken the time to consume Naomi Klein's book, it certainly does represent the political background. But I don't think Naomi's at the fuck it stage. I think she's still fighting it out and thinks that we can turn this around. I wish she would get on your radio show, Guy, and you'd have an opportunity to see if your logic can trump hers. Have you tried to get her on?
We have not.
No, we have not.
But that introduces a topic, and we'll discuss a whole bunch of things that you brought up, Matt, when you go off the air
thing,
here.
Guy, you can't hang up on me yet, because I'm a 13-year art professional, and I know art like I know, well, I don't know much, but I do know art. And the thought of you being down in Art Basel, which is like the epicenter of anything art, and, you know, trying to generate the proper artistic response to fuck it, I'm excited about it, Guy. And there might be a possibility of me traveling the 6 hours from Tampa Bay down to Miami to see you. So I'm glad to hear that you got the artist world on your side, or at least beginning to get it.
Well, we'll see. Let's talk about each one of those things, because Matt brought up any number of topics there. And I think I said in the film that, at least for me, fuck it doesn't mean throwing in the towel. It doesn't mean rolling over and dying. Yeah. It means throwing off the shackles of culture. And Dylan brought that up in his response as well.
Yeah, Dylan's response was excellent. We can connect this with Naomi Klein, who to me is in pure negotiation mode.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's bargaining.
And I have no doubt that the book is well-researched and it's well-written. But at the same time, at the end of the day, like Bill McKibben and like Michael Mann and like who was the guy in the Jacobs.
Yeah, Mark Z. Jacobson from Stanford University.
At the end of the day, their last sentence is always... it's always about negotiating with what's never been negotiable.
Right.
Every single time. They go through the stages, and then they come right back.
Well, let's go back to Corey Morningstar, who I mentioned earlier.
Right.
Her write-up on Naomi Klein's This Changes Everything was, first of all, to do a little graphic arts with the cover. And so she crossed out everything and put in nothing. This changes nothing.
Right.
Because... You're challenging capitalism by selling a $35 book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did I miss there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's clearly in negotiation. She's bargaining. And nature doesn't bargain.
No. At all. Ever.
At all. Not ever. Not so far.
Right.
But, you know, rich white people. So now's the time.
Right. Yeah. And that brings up a great point. If you have not read any of Corey's divestment pieces.
I mean, it was from her that I learned about the United Nations Advisory Group on Greenhouse Gases
right.
and the 1 degree scientific target that was set in October of 1990. So that's from Corey Morningstar. She writes some great stuff.
Yeah, and you want to talk about research that actually matters
right.
and is not being negotiated. I mean, you can do all the research you want, but if it's just for the same old bargaining, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. And I think she takes on Naomi and Bill McKibben directly in her work, and it's thorough, it doesn't, you know, it pulls no punches, basically.
Yeah, speaking of taking on McKibben and Klein and others, you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, I think Guy and I are going to take a shot at a new theme every once in a while, and it's going to be a takedown theme, where we take down people that we feel... are I guess misrepresenting would put it lightly.
Malpractice. Malpractice comes to mind.
People who have a voice, people who are being looked upon to give actual information that is meaningful to our lives, people that have a voice in the climate change world, like Naomi Klein, like Bill McKibben, like Michael Mann, like
James Hansen.
Right. And who was the guy I mentioned before? Jacobson.
Mark Z. Jacobson.
Yeah, Mark.
Yeah, who 2 years ago said we can switch to a completely renewable energy economy.
Right.
Which obviously is ludicrous. There's no renewable, for one thing. It's derivatives of fossil fuels.
Right.
So we're going to switch to solar panels and wind turbines and so forth. He said just a couple of years ago that we can do that by 2030. And now, just within the last couple of weeks, he said 2050. Oh, shifting baseline.
Yeah, you know,
at some point it gets so far out there that we're all gone.
Yeah, and it's incredibly, again, and this is an irresponsible.
Absolutely.
To hold a position like that.
Completely unsupported by evidence.
Yeah. And it seems to me that every so often – they just kind of push back the timeline. They push back the timeline. It's always if we do this now. It's if we can start today, we're okay.
Right. And not just change the timeline, but also change the temperature at which humans will be fine. So, right. So there's this piece from August 2008 in The Guardian by Oliver Tickell. Correct me if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, Paul. Oliver Tickell, at 4C, all we can plan for is extinction. So that's the headline. So, and at the time, 2008, people were willing to have the conversation about 4C leading to human extinction. But of course, since then, since 4C is now locked in, as admitted in the locked in the near term, as admitted by an enormous number of organizations, including the World Bank at this point, now that that's locked in, we'll be able to survive that. Now that it's a done deal, well, maybe it's six. Maybe it's eight. And in fact, that's an excellent lead-in to one of the topics I wanted to talk about in the climate change update. David Wasdell conducted a thorough analysis of climate sensitivity in September 2015, and it's titled Climate Dynamics, Facing the Harsh Realities of Now. And it was brought to my attention when Wasdell was interviewed on Radio EcoShock last week. And so I missed it for a couple of months there. Wasdell's report includes several noteworthy conclusions. One, and I quote here, current computer estimates of climate sensitivity are shown to be dangerously low, revealing, two, quote, an eightfold amplification of CO2 forcing in contrast to the threefold amplification predicted by the IPCC Climate Modeling Computer Ensemble.
Oh, say that again.
Yeah, so he says it's, this climate sensitivity is more than twice what we're being led to believe by the IPCC. Three, quote, the 2 degrees C target temperature limit is set far too high, end quote. And four, quote, anthropogenic change is at least 100 times faster than at any time in the paleo record, end quote.
100 times.
100 times. You know, and we know now about an event that transpired 55 million years ago where the temperature increased 5 degrees C in 13 years. 100 times faster than the paleo record means, is it warm in here?
Anytime now.
It feels like it's warm in here. The report's bottom line, quote, there is no available carbon budget. It is already massively overspent even for the 2 degrees C target, end quote. As expected, Wasdell and the host of Radio EcoShock, Alex Smith, and the phrase malpractice comes immediately to my head every time I think of Alex Smith.
Yeah.
Wasdell and Smith are clinging to the unsupported notion that a rapid rise to 4 degrees Celsius above baseline in the near term and ultimately well beyond that mark will be survived by humans. Well, this is what they believe for at least a few humans, notably privileged white men.
In bunkers.
In bunkers, exactly. I mean, this is utter lunacy, and again, further evidence of malpractice.
But in their defense, these are people who, on some levels, and you know, this is where Chris Hedges falls in, are brilliant in their analysis, but they cannot get past capitalism.
Right.
Capitalism is it for them. If we can somehow fix capitalism, it's fine. They cannot get past it.
Right. Why do none of these people ever quote the now abundant Referee Journal literature indicating that civilization is a heat engine?
Because that's the water that they don't see.
Civilization is a heat engine. That's the air they breathe that they don't see. That's the water they're swimming in that they don't see. That's
what does Hedges call his form of capitalism that he always goes off on? He puts another word prior to it.
Inverted totalitarianism? That one?
But something capitalism, he says. Oh. I can't think of the name. It's something with aggression, but I can't think of what he calls it. But he can't get past that. I mean, there's a certain type of capitalism that's bad for him.
Right. Right. They're just like Bill Hicks and his little routine on drugs.
Yeah.
Right. There's good drugs. Those are the legal drugs. Right. Those are the ones that we tax.
Right.
So the taxed drugs are the good drugs. Right. And then there's bad drugs. Those are drugs we don't have taxes on yet. So we're changing that, by the way.
And
he was talking about marijuana.
Well,
so there's good capitalism. There's bad capitalism. Good capitalism, the kind I benefit from.
Yes.
Bad capitalism is the kind that punishes me.
Yeah. Good capitalism pay me for a speech. Bad capitalism
makes me pay to get to this venue.
Speech. That's right.
You're listening to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. Mike and I are taking your calls. You can call us toll-free at 888-874-4888. And if you don't call, you're going to be subjected to our torturous conversation. Oddly, we have a live studio audience. Marilyn came just to listen to this torturous conversation. Woo! Yay, Marilyn!
Trying to be a canned laughter.
Right, and provide canned laughter. I tried to tell her I could provide my own laugh track, but whatever. Let's talk about people who do get it for a second.
Okay.
Okay, so filmmaker Werner Herzog, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yep, that's correct, pretty good.
He was interviewed in January 2013, and I just came across it yesterday when a filmmaker sent it to me. Jesse Zuckman sent me this interview. So January 2013, he was interviewed at the-talk.com, the talk.com. No, it's thetalks.com. I came across the interview yesterday. As usual, the artists get it long before the rest of us. Here's a snippet from the interview. The interviewer says, "I felt that crocodiles were a statement about human influence on the environment. Am I in the ballpark?" So he's talking about some previous conversation. I'm entering the middle of the conversation here. And here's an interesting response. You can tell that Herzog wanted to get this point across, so he was going to work it in no matter what it took in the interview. So the interviewer asks about crocodiles and a statement on human influence. Werner's response, "I'm convinced that our presence on this planet is not sustainable, so we will be extinct fairly soon."
Yeah, and I don't know if you've ever heard this guy's voice, but he has one of the great voices for documentary films of all time. It's this heavy, I don't know if he's German or Austrian, but this heavy, slow, just melts you. Then when he says that, you're like, whoa.
Right. I'm convinced that our presence on this planet is not sustainable.
Verein.
So we will be extinct fairly soon. And so then the bargaining begins immediately. So the interviewer who asks, you know, isn't it a nice day outside?
Yeah.
And Herzog goes to, we're all going to be dead next week. So the bargaining starts from the interviewer. So he says, you think even a part of our species won't be able to adapt?
Like, what part is he talking about?
Right.
Oh, the ones with gills. It's not Waterworld, man.
Herzog's response, yes, we will be extinct. Human beings will be extinct because cockroaches and reptiles have a much better survival chance. The human race is not sustainable, and there are too many things that can wipe us out. Microbes are really after us. And I'm going to take a break here. He sounds a lot like Afrazen with that one.
Right.
He's a little angry that the microbes are coming for us.
Microbes that last.
And then he says, and a meteor and a massive volcanic explosion. The last really big one in New Zealand 72,000 years ago nearly wiped out everything, and there are much more massive ones still looming out there. The bargaining, of course, continues from the interviewer. You don't think we are intelligent enough to adapt? Oh, there we go.
Yeah, this is where it's gotten us.
Exactly. Like, we're so smart. You might even say we're too smart for our own good, to quote the title of Craig Dilworth's book from a couple of years back. And there's something called Fermi's paradox. You know, Enrico Fermi proposed this in 1950. And he said, and it's become to be known as Fermi's paradox, he said that if any life that becomes smart enough, becomes intelligent enough to leave their planet – will surely become smart enough to cause their own extinction before they're able to engage in interstellar travel.
Right.
But that's right where people go.
Yeah.
Right. So the interviewer says, don't you think we're intelligent enough to adapt? And Herzog responds, no, because if you have a power failure for a month, what are you going to do? All of Canada, all of the United States, all of the civilized worlds, you can't go shopping anymore because there's no way to enter a supermarket because it opens with a motion detector.
You're just standing there going, waving at
you. So that's where our intelligence has taken us. Yeah. We can't even open the door.
I can't adapt and go back to my car, right. Which has no gas.
You can't pump gasoline, he continues. You can't do anything anymore. How would you feed yourself? You cannot decide from one day to the next, oh, I'll plow the land and grow my food.
Well, I had this conversation with my students when we were talking about peak oil 5-6 years ago.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They had solutions like these. You know, they would rollerblade from Phoenix up to Flagstaff with their deer rifle so they could kill an elk. I'm like, first of all, you know it's uphill. Right. You need your arms to kind of get up that hill. You strap that rifle on your back. Okay, you have a rifle? Well, no, but okay.
But when the time comes, I'll get one right away.
Let's say you get the elk. Then what? You got to eat that thing on spot? You got to start a fire? You got refrigeration with you?
Yeah, did you see the movie Into the Wild?
Right.
He killed an animal, a big animal.
And he ate some bad berries or something.
Exactly. And he went extinct. Boom, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next question from the interviewer. Does our impending extinction worry you?
Mm.
And Herzog responds, it doesn't make me nervous that we'll become extinct. It doesn't frighten me at all. Of course, he's pretty old, to be fair.
Yeah, he could be dead already for all we know.
There is a wonderful thing that Martin Luther the Reformer said when he was asked, what would you do if the world would disappear tomorrow in the apocalypse? And Luther said, today I would plant an apple tree.
Oh.
Hmm.
Huh?
Right. That was my response, too. I was hoping one of you guys could interpret that for me.
Yeah.
Sort of deconstruct that to me. What the hell is that?
Yeah, I wasn't a Lutheran. I was a Catholic.
Oh. Oh, the live studio audience has a...
What was it?
I said he's just going to live life as though nothing...
Right. He's going to live life as if the apocalypse is not coming.
Got it.
Right up until the apocalypse. Because, I mean, this is sort of the Zen approach, the Buddhist approach.
Yeah, it is. But could
you're going to die.
I guess. And it could also be the denial approach. On some level.
So,
sure.
You hate Buddhists? Is that what you're saying right here on the air?
No, I love all Buddhists.
Okay, final question from this interview that we're going to address today. Do you believe in a superior being?
Oh, don't.
And Herzog says, oh, don't ask that.
That's the best.
But if I knew that tomorrow a meteorite would destroy our planet, I would start shooting a new film today. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because he's just going to keep doing what he's doing.
Sure.
What he loves to do,
which
is, you know, sort of consistent with my message.
Right.
Do what you love until you can't.
Yeah.
Well, if he's not dead yet, you need to get him here on the radio show.
Yeah,
yes.
He'd be a great guest.
Yes.
Just for his voice.
Well, yeah. And then we could do a little back and forth, right? We do him the favor by having him do an interview with us, because I'm sure he'd view that as a big favor.
Right.
And then he can make a documentary film about us.
Yes.
It's a great idea.
It's called Nature Bats Last.
Yeah, trade-offs. Yeah.
Right. Starring Mike Sliva, special guest Danny Pearson.
I'll just do a cameo.
Just do a cameo.
Hey, we have a call.
Hey.
We have a call. Claude from New York. What do you got, Claude? You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you. I was two things, actually. I was wondering if you guys, maybe if you, earlier in the show, you may have given your opinion, but what are you thinking about COP21, the climate change conference coming up in Paris? And do you think that after 21 years, I mean, you know, that's 21 different conferences, is there really anything these people are going to ever do?
No, they're not going to do anything.
They're going to claim they're doing something. They're going to claim they're aiming for a 2°C target, which is already locked in, by the way. And that's not even the target. One was the absolute upper limit that we should have been shooting. And we've known this for 25 years. And in each of those 25 years, by the way, we set a new record for carbon emissions.
And now they have an excuse to shut down protests as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So I think, Claude, thanks for asking the question because it gives us an opportunity to rant. Mm-hmm. I think that we're screwed in that there is no politically viable approach to dealing with climate change. Yeah. We know that, according to now quite a bit of refereed journal literature, only collapse of civilization prevents runaway climate change. Well, of course, now we know years later, after Tim Garrett wrote his signature paper in 2007, that because of global dimming, collapse of civilization triggers runaway climate change. So we're in this no-win situation. You think a politician's going to tell you that?
No, it's a solution-based culture trying to solve a predicament.
And Darjamail, in his weekly dispatch for Truth Out yesterday, had the headline, Too Little, Too Late. And so he's recognizing what regular listeners of this show already know. The subtitle reads, Temperature and CO2 Thresholds Breached as Climate Disruption Intensifies. He writes, the faux goal of 2 degrees Celsius continues to be discussed. Meanwhile, the planet burns, end quote. In his article, Jamail points out that 2C is a politically agreed upon limit. It is not based on science.
Right.
And he's one of the few legitimate journalists, in my opinion, in the world. He writes from the perspective of evidence, not the nonsensical propaganda put up by the majority of the mainstream media. And so that was yet another great piece of writing by Dar Jamail at Truth Out.
Well, it's refreshing to read Dar's stuff and Corey's stuff because nobody else writes what they write, and nobody else dares to go where they go. And they do it with an incredible amount of data and research, and they're excellent writers. And at this point, they're about the only two people I can read.
Right. Right. So there was an article yesterday at Counterpunch, November 23rd, 2015, at Counterpunch, and it was headlined, James Hansen's Nuclear Fantasies.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's actually a pretty good piece because, as it turns out, the well-known climate scientist will be heading to Paris to promote nuclear power while also attacking environmental groups.
Right.
That's his lead up to the United Nations COP21 climate conference starting in Paris next week. He's going to get there a little bit in advance. He's going to attack environmentalists and attack people who think nuclear power is a bad idea.
Right. Well, I mean, he's clearly lost it. I mean, I don't even know what to say at this point anymore. Wasn't he the guy, 10 years ago that said, we need to do something right now?
Yeah. Well, it was 1988.
Yeah.
He went to Congress.
Yeah.
And he said, we got to do something right now.
Yeah.
And by the way, every one of those years since 1988, and starting, in fact, 3 years before that, we set a new record for carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. So apparently we're doing something about it.
Yeah.
We're making it worse. Yes, absolutely. Making it worse every single year.
And, you know, the other thing is what inevitably happens at these conferences is some bargain, some deal is made between two superpowers, or, you know, two powers, and then it's like, hey, we made some progress.
Right.
We made a little bit of a dent. We're going to lower emissions by 2038.
Well, yeah, we're going to start doing something in 2030. That was the agreement reached last time.
We're going to punish Volkswagen.
I can guarantee you the emissions will be down in 2030.
Yeah.
one way or another.
Well, we're going to start doing something when all of us who are in power right now aren't in power anymore. And it's somebody else's problem,
yes.
Right?
Yes, as soon as the next poor slob gets elected, selected,
exactly.
Whatever
that's
you want to
problem.
Call it. Yeah.
It's too bad we can't do the show live from Paris.
Yes, let's go.
We're going to start a fundraiser right now. If you'd like to.
You can just mail in your cash.
Right.
This post office box. Let's talk about more people, shall we?
Sure. What do you got?
I got the director of the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States.
Okay. Ooh.
John Brennan. John, my man Brennan, delivered a speech on November 16th, 2015, so that's 8 days ago, at the opening session of the Global Security Forum 2015. It was held at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He addressed climate change, along with other issues facing society, which he called problems instead of predicaments. And I apologize for the misogyny in his opening line. Quote, mankind's... What a ridiculous term. First of all, it's not mankind, it's humankind, and we're not kind.
No.
It's like, it should be man-mean.
Man-means.
Or man-asshole, or something. Okay, back on track. Quote, mankind's relationship with the natural world is aggravating these problems and is potential source of crisis itself. Last year was the warmest on record, and this year is on track to be even warmer. Extreme weather, along with public policies affecting food and water supplies, can worsen or create humanitarian crises. of the most immediate concern, sharply reduced crop yields in multiple places simultaneously could trigger a shock in food prices with devastating effect, especially in already fragile regions such as Africa, the Middle East, and South Asia. Compromised access to food and water greatly increases the prospect for famine and deadly epidemics, end quote. And I think that's a little simplistic. I think compromised access to food and water doesn't greatly increase the prospect for famine and deadly epidemics. I think that's the definition of what causes famine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is disruptions in the food supply.
Mm.
Well, right? His opening sentence, too. The natural world is, you know, our relationship with the natural world is aggravating these problems. And a potential...
Potential
source of crisis.
Yeah.
We're not there yet.
Well, we're never there.
Potentially. And it's...
It's always right around the corner.
Yeah. It's like, you know, they have the same script. Wait a minute. I'm starting to sound like Alex Jones.
Whoa. I'm not sure which is worse, Smith or Jones at this point.
Toss up.
You know, my entire life. I remember when I was a kid and... My parents were educators, and us kids would be sitting around while they're talking with the other educators. Mm-hmm. So my dad was the principal of the elementary school and the middle school. Right. And they had the teachers over after school and on weekends for dinner and parties and so on. And it was a big deal. You know, this was the late 60s, early 70s, and the environment was in the news on a regular basis. And they were always saying that, we've got to turn this around right now. And I heard this in the news a million times. I heard it from my parents. I heard it from the other teachers that the clock is at 1 minute till midnight.
Right.
We've got to do something. And it hasn't moved.
No.
The clock is at 1 minute till midnight still.
Right. But of course, when we look back in time and a historical record, like if you look at the collapse of civilizations, it's always in a time period that isn't necessarily, you know, a couple of years. It's decades and it's decades. But looking back, it seems like a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But when you're in it, it seems like, well, it should have happened already.
Mm-hmm.
And it clearly hasn't.
Right.
I mean, if it happens in 100 years, that's actually pretty quick.
Yes. But it hasn't happened. And all right. That time we said we needed to do something now.
But it is happening. And most people, besides obviously the three of us, we know it's happening. We can feel, you know, we can feel that we're being cooked.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And most people do not feel that.
Well, right. And when I come across people on speaking tours, especially people who spend time outside, like gardeners, people who are trying to grow food,
right. They
get it right away.
Yeah. Like Gene.
Like Gene. When Paul and I were in Bremerton, Washington, mm-hmm. a few months ago, Gene picks us up at the ferry station coming over from Canada, eh? and we drive 20 minutes, and she says, now I get it. I heard all your talks and I saw all your writing about abrupt climate change, but I thought, it's not really happening yet. Well, it happened to me this year, and it was surprising. Yeah. And she's been following my work for years, and she's surprised.
Yeah.
Because everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, right?
And Tyson.
Yeah, Mike Tyson, the great philosopher.
Right.
Wonderful line. And she got punched in the face by nature, causing all of her crops to do weird things.
Her arugula bolted.
She's supposed to get two cuttings. She got none.
But that's part of the problem with, and I don't know, I can't say that it's a species problem because there are, you know, plenty of people that are have come and gone and are still around that have not been in the dominant culture, that we have to have it happen to us personally before we quote-unquote get it.
Yeah.
Have there been cultures that actually have the vision to see long-term? And I would have to say yes, because there are cultures that are still around and would still be around if it wasn't for our culture.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, there was the Iroquois Confederation, right, that relied upon women, mm-hmm. who we would at this point call women of color, to make the important decisions, always thinking seven generations out.
Yeah.
You don't make any important decision without thinking seven generations ahead.
We can't think 7 minutes ahead of here.
Do we have 7 minutes left?
I don't know. We got to make a buck.
We're taking your calls again. This is Nature Bass Last in the Progressive Radio Network. We're taking your calls toll-free at 888-874-4888. So give us a comment, give us a question, and we'll respond. Well, probably not politely.
No.
It's not what we do.
No, not at all.
I can do more climate stuff if you want.
Yeah.
That'd give us things to talk about.
Go ahead.
All right. Yet another example of interactions between self-reinforcing feedback loops was reported in the October 29, 2015 issue of Scientific Reports. In this case, tundra fires were blamed for thawing permafrost. More and larger fires translates to more carbon in the atmosphere as the wood is combusted. Ditto for methane released from thawing permafrost. The warmer it gets, the more permafrost degrades and releases methane into the atmosphere. So more fires means more methane released from thawing permafrost, which creates enhanced conditions for more and larger fires. The downward spiral continues and continually speeds up. So that's a classic interaction between two of the self-reinforcing feedback loops. So they're not only, it's not only a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah.
It's all the snakes eating each other's tails.
And that's the thing, all these feedback loops, it really only takes one or two to really do us in.
Well, right. And in fact, two come immediately to mind. There's the methane release from the Arctic Ocean, and now it's worldwide, basically. But today, methane levels in the atmosphere are over 2,300 parts per billion, less than 700 parts per billion for the entire history of humanity until quite recently. So it could be the clathrate gun going off in the Arctic Ocean is enough.
Right.
Or it could be that moistening of the troposphere. The most abundant greenhouse gas in the atmosphere is water vapor. And as it gets moister, it gets hotter. As it gets hotter, it evaporates more and puts more moisture up into the troposphere. And every 1 degree Celsius temperature increase leads to up to 3 more degrees Celsius temperature increase. So that's just either one of those two alone is enough to cook us in the very near term.
Yeah, and we're literally tinkering with things that probably even haven't come up on the radar yet and won't for –
absolutely.
May never, they won't. We'll be gone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it may be one of those.
Right.
It's like absolutely. We're all playing Jenga at the same time and all pulling out a piece and hoping it stays up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, good times.
Everybody should get Jenga.
It's really on Google a few years ago. I had a slide for one of my presentations, and it was the Jenga game, but it had different pictures of species on it.
Ooh! Oh, I like that.
I was like trying to find it where you could buy it, but I could never find it. But I just saw a picture of it. So.
And I'm willing to bet that there was one species conspicuous by its absence in the pictures.
Us.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's no home picture of Homo sapiens in Jenga.
Well, we play the game.
We play the game.
Not in the game.
No. I've never heard of Jenga until I met you guys. But
you know what it is, right?
I never heard. I do now.
Yeah.
I never heard of chicken fried steak either, but then.
Okay. Really? You heard of a rubber policeman?
Today I did.
Yes.
Thanks for educating me on that as well.
Okay, we're running short on time here. I'm gonna hear my own voice, one of my favorite things. If you don't mind, we don't have a caller. The so-called pause in global warming since the major El Nino event in 97-98 has been accompanied by an exponential rise in heating of the oceans. Although the heat is now being released by the current powerful El Nino event, NOAA reported huge gains in ocean heating during the third quarter of 2015. So even though the ocean is releasing a bunch of heat as a result of El Nino, NOAA reports that the ocean is still heating. It's still measurably gaining heat. And by huge gains, NOAA means 780 trillion watts and 870 trillion watts, respectively, at less than 700 meters depth and 700 to 2,000 meters depth during the last 12 months. 870 trillion watts at below 700 meters, that's a long way down. You know what it takes to heat the ocean? It's not like you can take your hair dryer out there and point it at the ocean and it warms up 2,000 meters lower. This is a big deal.
I don't know if you see some of these hair dryers.
Yeah, so I got this information from David Appel's blog, Quark Soup, by David Appel. You can find it there. These are absolutely huge numbers. Citing two recent journal articles, a paper in the November 19th, 2015 issue of Yale Environment 3060 concludes, quote, "The world's iconic northern lakes are undergoing major changes that include swiftly warming waters, diminished ice cover, and outbreaks of harmful algae," end quote. The lakes include Lake Baikal, quote, "the deepest, largest in volume, and the most ancient freshwater lake in the world, holding one-fifth of the planet's above-ground drinking supply. It's a Noah's Ark of biodiversity, home to myriad species found nowhere else on Earth." I've added this information to feedback number 28, which deals with freshwater bodies as sources of release of greenhouse gases. And final climate change update for this week. Shortly after we announced this show on Facebook yesterday as a call-in show, we received a question from Charles Fish. Quote, in case the CO2 gets to 1,000 parts per million, and that doesn't kill us, and the methane bomb gets CH4 to 2,500 parts per billion, and that doesn't kill us, and we don't annihilate ourselves with nuclear weapons or nuclear power plants, could you comment on Plan E, the hydrogen sulfide coming from the anoxic ocean depths? Mike, do you want to take this one?
Yes, that'll kill us.
Thank you, Mike. You've graduated to climate scientist for the show.
Right on. All right, that about wraps it up this week. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last and Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last at PRN.FM. And feel free to post questions you'd like us to answer on the show. Since we can take more callers, we need some more questions. And continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com. Thanks, Paul. For further updates, essays, and speaking tours. And Guy, who do we have on next week? We have a special guest, actually.
We do have a special guest next week. And
it is
Gail Tverberg. I knew that one. I knew that. You didn't have to feed it to me the whole thing. Gail Tverberg, who writes at OurFiniteWorld.com, and she writes a lot about peak oil and its expected outcome for civilization, meaning its demise. So I'm looking forward to that show.
That'd be great. And you can, if you missed the show, you can find us on the archives at PRN.FM and rate us on iTunes. Thanks again for your calls this week. And to Aprazin for his music, both songs, and to Paul for chiming in this week. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end,
ate your bats last.